This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international programme of the non-profit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
I think it's safe to say that no one on this crew has been more obsessed with getting home than I have. But when I think about everything we've been through together, maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. And if that journey takes a little longer, so we can do something we all believe in, I can't think of any place I'd rather be, or any people I'd rather be with.
To the journey.
You're here.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To The Journey. I'm your co-host, Zachary Frueling, and with me, as always, are...
Kay Shaw. And...
Suzanne Williamson.
Well, when I first asked you guys, what do you guys want to talk about on this episode of To The Journey? Kay, you said to me, we need to talk about Chakotay.
We do need to talk about Chakotay.
We do.
So now's your chance. Talk to us about Chakotay, Kay.
Way to load on the brushes up. We do need to talk about Chakotay because he gets a raw deal. He gets hated on way too much, and I just don't agree with it. I think it's really unfair. So we're going to do an episode debunking the myth of the rubbish Chakotay because I disagree with it.
So this is not so much a Chakotay character analysis. This is like a Chakotay defense. Is that what you're saying?
A Chakotay love fest.
It's a Chakotay love fest.
Yes.
Most people I know would sign up for that.
Love fest. Because my birthday's tomorrow, so we're going to talk some Chakotay.
Yay!
Seriously, though, why do people hate Chakotay so much? A lot of people seem to not like Chakotay, and I've never really understood it myself.
Well,
I don't know.
I suppose, like, to get the criticism out of the way at the beginning, not that this is my own personal criticism, but the criticism that I hear about him, I just think people think that he wasn't given enough to do.
No, he wasn't.
So people think he's a bit one-dimensional in that sense, which... I don't think it's true. I do agree he wasn't given enough to do, but I don't think he's one-dimensional because of it. And secondly, I think that people have issues around the whole Native American thing and how it was handled. And I know there were some issues with that behind the scenes. So there's some stuff there as well. So I think those are the things he mainly tends to get criticized for.
Yeah, definitely like the Native American stuff, because it was all over the board as to which tribe. Mm. Oh no, you're mixing things. Yeah. So I can understand that, but still see past the writer's errors and embrace the Chakotay and his leather clad self.
But why is it any different than it was, say, for Sulu back in the original series, this pan-Asian character? You know, we have a pan-Native American character. What's so bad about that compared to, say, Sulu?
Well, exactly. That would be my point. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think we're distant enough now from the 60s that people can kind of write that off a bit more, of being more of a product of its time. Whereas for some reason with the 90s, people don't seem to be able to do that, even though we've obviously come quite a distance from then now. Maybe in another 20 years, people will be able to let it go a bit more. I don't know.
when Voyager is 40 years old, it'll be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Voyager maybe. Will be 25 here before too long.
Mm. I know. That's quite a scary thought, isn't it? Oh, yeah.
It seems like just yesterday.
So now that the criticism is out of the way, as easy to understand as that was, let's dive in. What do you guys love about Chakotay? I always thought of him as like the Man in Black. You know, he's like this criminal at the beginning of the show. No, he kind of is. He's like this dark character. He's a criminal. He's on the run, but he's got this magnetic soul to him. Like, he's got character and strength, even though he's a criminal at the beginning of the series. So he's like the Man in Black to me.
Well, I don't see him walking around with a guitar and singing Ring of Fire.
I would pay money to see that.
That would be awesome to see, though. Maybe a holodeck recreation of that. That'd be great.
Yeah. Yeah, but I really agree with that, actually, Zach. The way that you put that, the fact that there's something magnetic about him, I definitely agree with. He's just got this warmth to him as a character.
He seems so easy to talk to.
Instantly likable is what I'd say. And approachable as well.
Definitely.
It's part of having come from the Maquis, too, I think. Like, you know, he has this kind of casual disregard for the Starfleetness of being back in Starfleet. Like, you know, protocol is for its own sake is not his thing, and I totally get that.
You want to do it the Maquis way?
Bam.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. But, you know, it's interesting that comes up because he really could have been quite an intimidating character and quite of an aggressive character. And although we see shades of that, there's just seems to be something very gentle about him right from the beginning for me. And I don't know whether that's tied up with like the way that they make him a spiritual character and make him this kind of thoughtful, analytical kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, he just instantly seems quite safe and quite gentle and like somebody who would be a protector to people. That's how he comes across to me.
The way he stands up for B'Elanna when he's trying to get B'Elanna to be chief engineer, I think that the fact that that happened so early in the series set the tone there. But in the first season, he still kind of frowns a lot. He's not really a totally warm character yet in the first
season. He's totally warm to Catherine because they're sitting, you know, cross-legged on the floor of the ready room and he's opening up his medicine pack.
Yeah, and that's like, what, episode 5, 6?
Yeah, it's early on and it's like, ooh, hello. So he's... he's smiley with her.
Well, we learn, don't we, that she made an instant impression on him.
Yes.
We know the scene, don't we, on the bridge? That famous scene.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually a meme with that particular shot of the two of them up in each other's faces, which says, the look that launched a fandom.
With Aiella just off to the side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She stands up to him, and I think something clicks in his head at that moment. The impact that she has on him is massive, right from the off. Definitely.
And I think Captain Janeway finds him intriguing. I mean, he stands up to her. He still has kind of this Maquis aggressiveness to him, but he's also thoughtful and reflective and kind. And there's this juxtaposition of character traits in Chakotay that is very interesting and calming for her, I think, actually.
Well, I think she's surprised when she meets him because she's read his files. She knows all about his background. But then to meet the man and see that he's not the criminal that he was made out to be, that there's another dimension to him.
She didn't know that he liked Dante.
Oh my gosh.
She didn't know that he liked Dante.
Well, he didn't until he borrowed it. I don't think she finds that out
until a while later. Yeah. I think they discover that a while later on. But yeah.
Talk about gaps in his personnel file.
I think that, yeah, he is a massive surprise to her. He's not what she was expecting at all from what was on paper. And like you said, he stands up to her. Well, yes, he does stand up to her. But the thing that I find really interesting, and I think this is as much an out-of-character thing as it is an in-character thing, so as much a production thing as anything else. Putting the first female captain in Star Trek and then putting a male first officer to play opposite her could have been... it could have gone horribly wrong, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, he could have constantly been challenging her authority, making her look weak, making her look...
it could have been condescending.
Well, much like her original first officer kind of came across.
Yeah. It could quite easily have been like that. But for some reason, the way that the two of them gel and the way that his character works, it just works perfectly. Like... whilst he challenges her authority, he never does it in a way that suggests that he disrespects it. And I think to put a woman in there for the first time, like now looking back 20 years later, we don't see it in quite the same way. Like, that was a massive deal at the time, you know, the first woman captain. There was a huge fuss about it and a huge hullabaloo about it. And it had to go right. Otherwise, it was going to be a huge mess for Star Trek, basically.
Well, it's got to be a tough role to act because he can't play a jellyfish either, right? She can't walk all over him because that's not believable. He's got to stand up for what he believes in, and he does that very well. But he can't step on her either. So it's a very delicate balance.
His role as the first officer is as important to how well that worked as obviously Kate's fantastic performance as Janeway. Mm-hmm. And he just, for me, strikes the balance absolutely perfectly between being able to be that strong presence that she's got to lean on and also to challenge her when necessary, but without ever undermining her, because he never undermines her. And I think that's the key to the success of the character for me.
But it's actually kind of a miracle that she made him first officer, right? She could have made him a crewman and put him down scrubbing plasma manifolds, and she would have been totally justified in doing that.
But then the rest of the Maquis wouldn't have followed the suit, and then they wouldn't have been able to pilot the ship home.
No, they'd all be scrubbing plasma
manifolds.
They needed
so many people to make that ship work.
Well, that was the thing, you know. It wasn't just that they needed people to scrub whatever. It was that they needed a chief engineer and a first officer and all the rest of it, and a pilot as well, because, I mean, throw Tom into the mix there. I know he's not Maquis at the time, but, you know, he might as well be part of the Maquis for the way that the structure of everything works at the beginning. So, I just think he just comes in and it just works. But she obviously sees something in him at the beginning there in that moment, doesn't she? There's something that passes between them. Like, I know a lot of people would say, you know, it's something romantic or whatever. And yeah, it's
nice
to think that.
I say that.
A spark.
Yeah, and there's definitely something there. But I'm not sure I'd say it's a spark like that straight away. I think that comes a bit later, but for me, it's more a mutual understanding. Like, I think they just get each other. Like, she just goes, oh, this guy isn't what I was expecting. And I think in a lot of ways, she's not what he was expecting either.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wouldn't call it a romantic spark, but they're intrigued by each other.
Yeah, they click with each other. I think they see something in each other that they think they could work together, and they think they could have a good relationship in that way. There's definitely something there that you see instantly, that they have this mutual understanding.
Even despite the depth that Chakotay has, it must have been hard to go from being a Maquis to being first officer in a starship in literally the blink of an eye.
Yeah, but it's not situation normal, is it? And we've kind of talked about this before, that it's not really Starfleet in the strictest sense. It's Janeway's version of Starfleet.
No. And I get that it's a practical arrangement. They need to figure out what to do with the Maquis. They need someone to kind of rein them in. They need to create a little family. I get it. But I'm curious what it did to his self-identity. The transition from being a Maquis, being a rebel, being on the run, being what's essentially an outlaw, to all of a sudden having to put the fancy clothes on and keep a straight face and, you know, be on good behavior all the time. And it's a shift in identity. I'm curious what that did to him internally.
I think he wouldn't have an issue with doing that, though, because he was Starfleet. And it's like, once you're military, you're military. You can snap
just
back.
Fall right back in line is what you're saying.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, I mean, the odd thing is that the whole thing with the Maquis, it was never really his kind of crusade. He took it up because of what happened with his father, and so it became his crusade, but it was never quite about what it was about for the other Maquis for him. It was more about making amends to his dad, or the memory of his dad.
Revenge. I will avenge you.
But I do get what you're saying, and this is something that I think has been explored somewhat in fanfic, and it's something that's interested me as well in the past, thinking about writing fanfic, which is that, how is that for him when he's tied so much up of his identity with the fact that he's now got the tattoo, he's avenging his father, he's taking up the spirituality that he denied for a lot of his life, and then suddenly situation's completely changed and he can't be fighting the Cardassians in the Delta Quadrant because they're not there. How does that affect him as a person?
Why aren't they there? The Ferengi showed up. Where are the Cardassians? I mean, besides Seska? You know, they
went to
be
the Gamma Quadrant.
So why don't we see Chakotay having more of an identity crisis? Because what you're describing are reasons for being, his reasons for living, the quest that he's on. And all of those things are taken away, and we don't see him have much of an existential crisis about it.
Because he has another reason for living and a reason for being.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Helping Catherine get home. Helping Catherine get her crew home.
Yeah, because he instantly gets that. Here's another purpose.
Well, they want to get home too, right? I mean,
yeah. Well, he wants to get home so he can go back and fight the Cardassians. But yeah, it's helping Catherine.
Yeah.
He does really seem to take that up as his new quest, right? Mm-hmm. For the next 7 years, it's all about helping Catherine.
Yeah, oh, he absolutely devotes himself to it.
Angry warrior.
Yeah. Instantly, he's found this... Well, it's a more positive purpose, isn't it? I mean, I know he's trying to do it for his father and it makes him feel closer to him and all of that, but it's like he'd lost himself a bit, I think, and now he's finding himself more. Is more how I see it, rather than having a crisis in that way. It's like he'd lost himself in the Maquis thing and now this is coming back to who he really is.
But even his time in the Delta Quadrant brings him closer to his father because of meeting the Sky People in Tatoo.
Yeah.
So he gets to complete that part of his father's journey.
Well, yeah, and that's really interesting, isn't it? Because, again, with the whole finishing episodes and not really getting the what happens next or the exposition or the thoughts after the events. But it'd be really interesting to see how he kind of thought about that afterwards.
Oh, I would have loved if he had a vision quest and could have spoken to his father about it. That would have been amazing.
Yeah, why didn't they do that?
That's what fanfic is for.
Instantly, you know, with his whole belief system and the fact that... Not that he necessarily believes that everything is supposed to turn out a certain way or everything's preordained or anything like that, but that there's a sort of general you end up where you're supposed to be-ness about everything.
Do you think he had to kind of train himself to get back in the mindset of... this Native American spirituality? Like, sometimes late at night I'll put on like these guided meditation videos to go to sleep, and one of them I happened to stumble upon recently was like how to contact your spirit animal. Like, oh well, I better put that on. Do you think Chakotay had to like sit in his quarters to listen to these meditation videos to really wrap his head around, you know, get his head in the right space to do this Native American spirituality thing?
Well, my question is, Zach, what is your spirit animal? Did you find out?
I don't know. I fell asleep before, you know, halfway through the video, so and missed the payoff, missed the punchline, missed the climax.
That's upsetting.
That is
upsetting.
Yeah, to find out in part two, I guess. it's a guided meditation cliffhanger.
But it would be really interesting to see how he rationalized the fact that he did run into those Sky People, because he could end up feeling like, well, obviously then I was supposed to end up in the Delta Quadrant so that I could meet them. And that's an interesting set of thoughts about how that, what kind of mental place that puts him in.
Yeah, fate versus free will.
Yeah. Because we see, like, a lot of the others go through various stages of difficulty with being stuck away from the Alpha Quadrant and away from people they care about and all of that. But aside from the issues that we see Chakotay have when he actually finds out about what happened to the Maquis in, like, Hunters and stuff, we don't really see him have too much, like, oh, I'm stuck away from the Alpha Quadrant. He's kind of pretty accepting of the situation. That's how I see it, anyway.
Because all of his family was killed and all he had was the Maquis.
What would he do if he were actually near the bones of his ancestors as opposed to far away from the bones of his ancestors?
Kill more Cardassians, probably.
Oh, dude. Well, he would definitely change his chant before opening his medicine pack if he was closer. Okay, it was mentioned during an episode that Chakotay had great piloting skills during his first years in the academy. What happened to those piloting skills?
Obviously he got distracted by something, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't piloting shuttlecrafts.
Yeah, I heard he did the Kessel Run in 12 parsecs. Oh wait, wrong franchise. Yeah. No, he is a little bit of a Harrison Ford type character, right?
Yeah, archaeologist type. Just missing the hat and the whip.
I was thinking a little more Han Solo. He's kind of a rebel, but he's got a soul and he knows how to fly. And he's kind of a Han Solo type character. But yes, he's got the archaeology thing going. So it's like a mashup of Han Solo and Indiana Jones.
But who's Chewbacca then?
Neelix.
Neelix cannot be Chewbacca. I'm putting my foot down.
Yeah. If you stroke Neelix's beard a certain way, that's the sound. Does he make it?
Wow, that's a mental image I didn't need. So more than anyone else, really, right from the start of the series, he's got this like piece about him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not just down to his spirituality. I mean, obviously, that's a part of it. And it is really interesting to see a spiritual character in Star Trek, because we don't see that a lot through the various series of Star Trek. Yeah, we get a few here and there, but get a really properly sort of spiritual... I don't want to use the word religious because it's not quite the same thing, but mm-hmm. a sort of religious type character.
Yeah, a few spiritual Vulcans is all I remember here and there.
Yeah, and Vulcan spirituality is somewhat different because it's got less of a sort of religious component to it, I think. The Vulcan side of things, anyway.
But we don't see the kind of wrestling with making his Native American spirituality consistent with his overall scientific worldview that we get in, say, Deep Space Nine with the Bajorans, right? You get a deep dive into that spirituality over 7 years. I feel like with Chakotay, they missed an opportunity there. Like, it's still pretty superficial and stereotypical, and you don't see much of him wrestling with it.
No, and it would have been really interesting to see more of that.
I'm not quite sure they knew how to write it in.
Yeah. I do like how, though, when we do see his spirituality used as part of the story, how they do that. Mm-hmm. I do enjoy seeing that a lot.
Like in Scorpion.
Yeah, exactly. He brings out his traditional stories and...
In all fairness, it becomes a caricature. He's got a fable for everything, right?
Like you have a dad joke for everything.
Touche, touche.
But...
Never mind. Okay. I see where this is going.
Don't you mess with my Chakotay.
It's not rolled out all the time, though, is it? It's not rolled out every week in that way.
No.
More so early on.
Times a season or five times a season.
It's not even that often.
When we see the episode, the name has just escaped me for some reason, but when we see the episode where he ends up disembodied and they use the medicine wheel.
Oh, I love that one. That parallax?
I forgot what it's called.
Where B'Elanna has to put the stones on the wheel.
Is it parallax?
I think it is.
I don't know. My brain's gone with the name of it. But I like the fact that we get to see some of that and how the rest of the crew kind of respecting his beliefs and stuff.
No, it's not parallax.
And how it becomes a part of the story. No, I don't think it is now we've said
that. That's the one where Joe Carey gets punched in the face.
Yeah.
Poor Joe. <Yeah. laughs> Cathexis.
Oh yeah, that one. That one.
Yeah.
I think this is really interesting because related to this issue of how a Native American spiritualist, for lack of a better word, like Chakotay, fits into the 24th century. I mean, that essentially is the history of Native Americans in the 20th century, 19th and 20th century, right? Taking this group of people with a traditional spirituality that is essentially non-Western in the Western sense as we know it, and, you know, like almost overnight having to become a part of the modern world. And how do they reconcile that tension in their identity and tension in worldviews? I think it's very interesting.
Well, I mean, I think that's the reason why his tribe and his ancestors ended up living on this other planet rather than living on Earth, because Earth had become too technologically advanced and it wasn't really possible for them to live their lifestyle the same way anymore. So they moved away so that they could live a bit more in isolation. So,
well, that didn't work out very well for them.
It didn't, unfortunately. No, the choice of location wasn't the best, unfortunately.
They chose poorly.
There was some kind of spiritual component to them looking for somewhere, though, wasn't there, from what I understand? They didn't mm-hmm. just kind of like pick a random planet. There was it had to be the right planet and it had to feel like the right place and all of that. So I don't know. Maybe there is something in that. Maybe everything that happened with them was supposed to happen. I don't know.
Well, this is an interesting thread because Chakotay often is in a position of saying to Captain Janeway, maybe this is too much of a risk. Maybe we should just find a planet somewhere.
Maybe there's something in him that's just trying to get back to those roots. Because we know that he eschewed a lot of that stuff when he was younger and he was always very forward-looking and he wanted to go out and see the world, learn about other cultures, and he didn't really understand why his tribe didn't want to use technology. And obviously, as time's gone on and he's gotten older, he's started to regret some of that, I think.
Like learning to start a fire?
Yeah.
Should have paid closer attention.
Paid attention for that one.
That is such a lovely little little bit in there because it fits so well with like what happened with him and what went on with him when he was younger and the fact that he didn't really pay that much attention. Like, I just, it's such a chuck away little thing, but actually I think you can delve into that a lot.
And that he hates himself so much for not paying attention. It's like, ah, you're stuck with the only Indian that can't start a fire.
Well, exactly. And he then that kind of takes him back to the whole, oh, I wish I'd been more like what my dad wanted me to be. Mm-hmm. But as we know, his dad was quite happy for him to go off and do his own thing.
So it sounds like we all agree that Chakotay is a little bit of a missed opportunity when it comes to exploring the Native American spirituality. It's a little bit of a stereotype. We like the fact that he's got the spirituality. It's a little overly simplistic. They don't make good use of it. But where do you guys want to go from here? Do you guys want to keep talking about Chakotay, the representative of Native American spirituality in the 24th century, or Chakotay, the person, the individual? I think, you know, for all the things Chakotay is supposed to represent and the role that he plays, it's Chakotay, the leather-clad man, yes. It's Chakotay, the person that we like, right? We think he's an interesting person on Voyager, not just an interesting Native American.
Yeah, oh, sure. And there's a lot more to him than just that. He's not just that one-dimensional.
Well, he's an archaeologist, and he was a pilot. And there is a little bit of like, what else can we make Chakotay good at, right? He's a pilot. He's an archaeologist.
He's the counselor. He's the person you go to.
Yeah.
On the ship when you have a problem.
He's a people person.
He's a people person?
Yeah, he's a people person. That's what made him so successful in the Marquis, because he made a good leader because people attached themselves to him, not just because he's a strong leader, but also because he's an approachable person. And he, like we were saying before, he feels safe and he feels approachable.
Okay, let me put this another way. I'm going to take the flip side of this coin. I'm going to be the counterpoint. Chakotay is a faker. He fakes being good at Starfleet. He's really not all totally on board. He fakes being part of the Maquis. He's really not totally invested there. He's a faker through and through. That is the flip side of that coin.
I have my car keys, and I'm coming to get you.
He seems to function in any one of those environments, and he's not 100% invested in any one of them.
At the risk of Suzanne's wrath, there is something in that, yes.
No! Okay, not you.
No, I'm being a little harsh. I don't really mean he's a faker in that, you know, that negative of a sense. But there's a sense in which he's very fluid. He's able to function in different environments because he adjusts himself to those environments.
Yeah, although I also think that he's kind of purposeless for a long time, and it kind of feels like Voyager is finally his purpose, is how I would see it.
Neither one of you watch The Walking Dead, do you?
Mm-mm.
Because I was going to make a reference, he could be the Carol, which she does everything you were just saying, and she's my favorite character on The Walking Dead. So, go with that. Chakotay is Carol.
Chakotay is the Carol.
Yes.
He is adaptable in that way, that he can turn his hand to different things, but there's the risk of becoming a bit directionless because of that, yes. Because he does chop and change between what he does.
Well, he's never going to be the perfect Starfleet officer, and he's never going to be the perfect Maquis member.
No.
No, but he is Captain Janeway's perfect first officer.
Perfect sailing companion.
And then when you get into the books, yeah, he does pretty well there.
He does.
He has his issues, but then...
Yeah. How could it be otherwise?
I'm not going to spoil it for people who are going to read them, unlike Zachary.
Zach.
I've been known to read a Star Trek novel or two.
You have to read them.
I am currently reading the autobiography of Jean-Luc Picard.
That's the wrong series.
I know. I'm just saying it's not that I don't read Star Trek novels. I didn't read very many of them. And that's when I happen Voyager. To be reading
currently. So, whilst I agree with everything that you're saying, once he actually decides that, okay, now I'm on Voyager, we've got this mission that we need to get home, I've decided that... I don't want this to sound like arrogant. It could sound arrogant from his point of view, but Janeway needs me. You know, I'm going to be there for her and all the rest of it. And he commits to that 100%.
She couldn't have survived in the Delta Quadrant without him.
No, she could.
Really? Come on.
Yeah.
If she'd made someone else her first officer, she would have been fine.
I'm not saying there wouldn't be issues, but come on, this is Captain Janeway. As long as she has her compression phaser rifle, stay out of her way and everything's good.
That's what I'm saying, right? She doesn't need Chakotay.
She'd have still got them home. Mm-hmm. But whether she'd have been in any kind of sane mental state, I have no idea.
Probably. She would have been loopy as hell and just collapsed as soon as they got there and probably died.
Because he just, like, he provides so many different things for her. Like, he's her...
Think of the angry warrior speech.
And her confidant and, yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, Chakotay is kind of an interesting character because he's the kind of guy who will bring his Antarian cider on board his Maquis ship. Yeah. You know, if he had the Antarian cider on Voyager, that means he had it on his Maquis ship.
He did, although how it got from there to Voyager when they blew it up, I have no idea. Like a whole bunch
emergency
of
transport, get my cider out of there.
I'm going to say Seska.
Yeah, probably.
Wait, how did Seska get the cider off the ship? What do you
how
mean?
How did Seska do anything?
How did Seska do most things, yeah. That is one thing we do have to talk about with Chakotay, his various relationships. Now, Seska is very questionable, is all I have to say.
Yes.
Why did he even ever hook up with her?
Because she's dangerous.
Well, I didn't see very many other females on the Valjean.
No.
The only one we ever saw was B'Elanna, and yeah, that wasn't going to happen.
No.
So that just left Seska, and so any port in a storm, I guess.
Even though we had that early weird B'Elanna dream thing that I tried to forget.
That was very uncomfortable.
That was weird.
So uncomfortable.
I regularly forget that that was a thing. I think I block it out. But yeah, I don't think Chakotay ever thought of her that way.
No.
There's definitely feels like a sibling relationship. We've talked about that before, but a sibling relationship.
Okay, wait a minute. The Antarians are a Delta Quadrant species. So he picked that up along the way. That didn't have to come from the Valjean.
I was trying to figure out how we got the cider from A to B to C, but...
The Antarians hosted the rally in Drive.
Ah, okay.
How did I forget that?
I don't know. I had no idea either.
No, I didn't. But that's how he acquired the cider. Excellent.
Did you see in the Babel conference, somebody posted you can get a hoodie of the Drive uniform?
Yes!
I did see that. I want one.
I nearly died. I need one of those.
That's my
favorite uniform. We've said about that before.
Okay, well, that's one mystery solved. I was really curious how he got the cider on board.
So Seska's off the hook for that.
But we're on to something here. So Chakotay has a really interesting relationship history. It's not quite clear exactly what he's looking for.
No, but because I don't think he knows what he's looking for.
No.
It kind of mirrors his whole, he doesn't really know what he's doing with his life. Mm-hmm. For a long time, because he doesn't really know what he's doing with his life for a long time. He doesn't really know what he wants out of a relationship for a long time either.
Even the women you see him with throughout the series are all totally different.
That's what I'm saying. There's no theme. There's no consistency.
Yeah. I mean, Riley Fraser and Catherine and, what was her name, Kellen from that forgettable episode.
The ironically titled episode, yeah.
And then even Seven, which I'm not supposed to speak about. They're all different.
No, but I think for the purposes of this particular thing, we might just vaguely mention that that happened.
Yeah, we'll touch on it. Touch. Or Species 8472, I forget what her name was.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember either, but yeah.
I can remember the actress, Kate Vernon.
And that's the thing. Okay, if it were Tom going from woman to woman to woman before B'Elanna, I totally get that, right? But Chakotay is not a player in that way. He doesn't go from woman to woman to woman for its own sake.
No.
There's something different about the way it works with Chakotay.
Yeah, definitely. He's not a player in the same way that Tom is in the beginning, where it's just, oh, whose bed can I get into tonight kind of thing.
No, which Delaney sister?
Yeah, which Delaney sister?
False dichotomy right there.
For me, with Chakotay, it feels more like he's looking for something that he can't find. So he has a whole bunch of relationships, but it's not because he's trying to play the field. It's because he's looking for the one and he's not finding it.
Mm-hmm.
If he's looking for the one in Seska, he's barking up the wrong tree.
Well, I imagine, as we've seen, Seska can appear to be whatever she likes.
That's true.
So I imagine the Seska that she showed to Chakotay in the early days was not the Seska that we would recognize.
She's a chameleon.
Yeah.
Is she a karma chameleon?
She can appear to be, yeah.
Yes. A Native American karma chameleon.
She can make herself appear whatever she wants to appear as long as it gets her what she wants.
Like most Cardassians.
Yep, goes with the territory.
So Chakotay himself may not know what he's looking for, but we've seen 7 years of Chakotay's life on screen. We've seen him go from person to person. Do we know what he's looking for, even if he
Captain
himself does
Jane
not?
Way.
Catherine. Her name is Catherine.
Yes.
But then why doesn't it happen?
She has because a duty to happen. Fulfill. She has to get that crew home, and then, if you'd read the books, you'd understand this.
You did not just do that again.
I did.
Yep, again.
Start with Isabu's shirt.
Twice in one episode. It can't. It can't happen whilst they're on Voyager.
So by the time season 7 rolls around, he's basically resigned to the fact that that can't happen. So he's like, I'll take 7 of 9.
He's trying to move on. Like, he's just failing miserably to do it. But there's something in him that's just gone, I need to try and find something else and try and get over her.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I see it.
Yeah. Like, are you sure this is not in your head? That doesn't sound like what I saw on screen.
Yeah, but it's with a fling, isn't it? Like, you know, he's not taking that seriously from where I'm sitting.
Which is what all of them have been.
He's the typical gentleman with 7, just like he's a gentleman with everyone. But I don't see him seeing that as, like, a permanent relationship. He's
no.
just, again, he's gone back to his old pattern of behaviour, well, and he's trying to find somebody else, but he's just not looking in the right place.
Was there a catalyst for it? Like, what caused him to cease holding out for Captain Janeway?
Equinox. That's what I would say.
Yeah, Equinox did a lot of damage.
That is the single episode, I think, that does the most damage to their relationship out of everything that we see over the whole of the 7 seasons. Because she's way off the rails in that episode.
She definitely loses her way.
So we've kind of painted Chakotay out to be a little wishy-washy, doesn't know what he wants in the Maquis, doesn't know what he wants in Starfleet, doesn't know what he wants in a relationship. Why do we all like him so much as a character despite those things? Or maybe those are the things that make him relatable, because who really does know what they want?
Well, come on. Like, isn't that what we're all like, really?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Are we all basically Chakotay is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I think if you look at a lot of characters in Star Trek, you know, so many of them are like, oh, I went to Starfleet Academy and I was a genius and I did this and now I'm this amazing Starfleet officer and all the rest of it. And it's like, how relatable, realistically speaking, are most of those characters?
Yeah, Wesley not Crusher, very, not true. Relatable.
Most of them are brilliant. Most of them mm-hmm. are just like the top of their field and they're brilliant and they're amazing and they're really aspirational to look up to, but they're not people that you can envisage yourself being realistically. I think we could envisage ourselves being a Chakotay.
It is interesting to see Chakotay as a first officer who's not really an overachiever in any one thing.
Yeah. I mean, he went to Starfleet Academy and obviously he got through there and he did become an officer. So he's obviously capable and we know he's got a lot of skills in a lot of different areas, but although we don't ever really get told it, I kind of feel like he was probably just like one of the class in Starfleet. I don't feel like he was.
Yeah.
I don't feel like he was like the amazing high performing student.
Well, when you put it in these terms, he's actually one of the better everyman characters we've seen in Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's not to say that he couldn't have been top of his classes if he'd applied himself more, because he's capable.
He was too busy boxing to do that.
Does he have that little core to himself that he's like Willie Loman in Death of a Salesman, though? I mean, he's not like so identityless that he has a core to him.
Oh, he definitely has a core.
But what is that core, right? That's what I'm trying to get at.
There's just a searching about him. Like, he just seems like he's looking for his direction. He's looking for his purpose all the time. And then when we get to Voyager, he finds it. But for me, I think his core, to answer your question, is there's just like a warmth and an integrity to him and a sincerity as a person. I feel like he's very sincere. Like, he doesn't seem like a practical joker or somebody who'd say things and not mean them. Like, he just seems very sincere to me as a person.
Yeah, and he seems very grounded and present and even excited about things. Like when, you know, say Voyager stumbles upon a new type of anomaly, which never happens in Voyager, right? But, you know, there's a new anomaly out there. Chakotay is the one who's often going to say, sounds like it's worth a look, you know, and he's kind of excited about it. He's not like overly excited. He's not like, oh, we got to get back on course so we can get home to the Delta Quadrant. He's like, no, we're in the present moment. That's what's happening right now. It's worth a look. Let's go check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and we know that he left his home planet and wanted to see what was out there. So it makes sense for him to be like that.
He's not like Harry Kim, right? Harry Kim's always like, we got to get back to the Alpha Quadrant. And it's the most important thing to get home. That's not really Chakotay's thing. He wants to get home for Catherine's sake, I think. Mm-hmm. But he's not so driven.
He's not constantly whining about it.
Yeah, he can be so apathetic where he's like, ugh, I'm tired of doing this quest to get back home to the Alpha Quadrant. Let's find a planet somewhere. Or he could be like, let's go, 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 get back on course. He's very like in the moment. What's happening today? Where are we at? What's the adventure at hand? What are we going to explore? He's very aware of the present, more so than some of the other characters, I think.
Yes, definitely. And, you know, if you listen, going back again to the Angora speech, if you listen to what he actually says, he said that, you know, what he'd actually devoted himself to was to be there for her and to help make her burden lighter. Mm-hmm. It's not about necessarily getting home. If he can help do that without them getting home, then he's quite happy for that to happen as well.
It's just what he can do for her.
It's whatever she needs in the moment, mm-hmm. So he's always trying to keep her on track and help her to figure out what the right thing is to do in any given situation. So yes, ultimately she's all about trying to get home, but I'm not sure that he's quite so much like, well, that is the be all and end all. I think if he could persuade her that they should do something else, then that he'd be fine with that. If he thought that was the right thing to do.
Well, he could have been happy staying on that planet with the, what is that thing? Shelter, emergency shelter, what is that thing?
New Earth? That on planet? Dude, the name of the planet is New Earth.
But then
I can't remember Tuvok these
came back. Cheers, right. Tuvok.
That darn monkey.
They could all have just stayed there.
That would be an interesting fanfic. I'm sure it's out there and I haven't read it yet.
I'm sure it is. I haven't either. That's an interesting one. Guess what I'm searching for afterwards.
I know there was one with Tom Paris. So it was her, Chakotay, and Tom Paris. Yes.
Yes, I've read that one.
But again, this is just another example of that same sort of character, what we're kind of painting out to be a little bit of a character flaw on Chakotay. Like, this week he gets to be a carpenter so he can build Captain Janeway a shelter.
He's always whittling. Always.
He's always whittling something, right?
Yeah, but I mean, I think the fact that he has practical skills is not something that is particularly a leap, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think that's totally legit.
Because of how he grew up.
Yeah.
He just didn't pay attention to the fire thing. But he paid attention to how to make a headboard and a canoe.
How to make a headboard and a bathtub.
Yes. Bathtub.
Bathtub 101. He was paying attention. Yeah.
Well, I think despite all of these minutiae about Chakotay, there's this irreducible quality that he's just a likable person.
Yeah. He is a very likable person.
Extremely I want to have some cider with him. I don't know about you guys.
I would like to go on a moonlight sail with him.
What would you like to do with Chakotay's?
He could definitely cook me dinner, because I think he's got some skills there.
I want to go do some archaeology with him. That's what I want to do with Chakotay.
He would be fun to hang out with. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably...
Definitely. I would like one of his back rubs.
Yeah. Apparently he's very good at that. But he is very likable. And I mean, we see, aside from his weird and interesting relationship with Tom,
which yes.
I've said it before, I love and think is fascinating. Like, I love their relationship. But aside from that, you know, we see him get on well with everybody.
Yeah, even people he punches, he essentially has a trust fall with the next day. So.
Well, it's about establishing the rules more than anything else. It's like a It's almost like a parent-child relationship, isn't it? It's like, not that a parent would punish their child, but I mean, in terms of the rule enforcement part of it, it's like, you have to be the disciplinarian some of the time. You can't always be their best friend.
Chakotay's big daddy is what you're saying.
Big daddy? What?
Well, you guys, it's been fun talking about what we would do with Chakotay, but this isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM this past week, so here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek.fm.
Previously on Trek.fm, Earl Grey.
Exactly. I mean, like, Arsenal of Freedom, like, there's plot A, plot B, and plot C, if you look at it. I mean, this episode really has a lot going, because when I think of Arsenal of Freordom, I don't think of it as a Geordi episode, but yet we've just mentioned two really important moments with Geordi and him taking command and, you know, building his character. So it's a great episode.
Stage 9, a podcast about the people who make Star Trek.
I mean, it's, you know, there's a scene with a bear and Leonardo DiCaprio and, you know, whatever.
As I understand it, it's not a pleasant scene. They're not high-fiving each other.
It's pretty intense, you know. I wouldn't say it's unbearable, but it's pretty intense. Waka waka. Anyway.
The 602 Club.
For me, first of all, only being the second Star Wars book I've ever read, I like the difference of having a series of short stories and not just one novel by one author like the Claudia Gray book that I read, Leia, Princess of Alderaan.
The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
Okay, so I'm reading this really great book that I recommend. It's The Ultimate Star Trek and Philosophy, The Search for Socrates. It's a collection of stories from all different authors, and it's been on my bookshelf for a year.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on the iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and a written review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and most third-party podcast apps. And you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link as well. And speaking of iTunes, remember that we are in the middle of an iTunes review contest. You have between now and when episode 241 of To the Journey is published to leave us a star rating and a written review in the iTunes store, either in the US store or in one of the international iTunes stores. And your name will be entered into a hat, and you have the chance to win a Voyager box set donated by our associate producer, Ju Kim. So make sure you get in on the iTunes review contest if you have not already left us a star rating and a written review on iTunes.
Well, we always love to hear your thoughts. And if you want to give your thoughts on today's show, there are lots of ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is in the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. If you just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field, it'll come right up. And if you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose Message to a Trek FM Show and select To the Journey. That will come right to us. And you can always find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So, Suzanne, when you're not having your moonlight sail with Chakotay, where can our listeners find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter. My handle is at KJaneWay8. I will occasionally pop up in the Babel Conference, and I will be on the newest episode of The Edge talking about Star Trek Discovery, episode number 10, Despite Yourself. So, Zach, when you and Chakotay aren't fighting over who gets to wear the Indiana Jones hat on your next archaeology excursion, where can our listeners find you?
Well, you can find me elsewhere on Trek.fm as co-host of Metatrek's Trek FM show on Star Trek and philosophy. You can always find me in the Babel Conference if you'd like to talk about Voyager with me over there. And you can follow me on Twitter. My handle is just my name, at Zachary Fruhling. That's Zachary, Z-A-C-H-A-R-Y, Fruhling, F-R-U-H-L-I-N-G. And how about you, Kay? When you're not busy rearranging the rocks on Chakotay's medicine wheel, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs and around the Trek FM network?
Well, they can always find me in the Babel Conference. And if they want to look me up on Twitter, my handle there is ChocoWeeble.
If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. All available through our special patrons website, the Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you can find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
Well, we have some people that we'd like to thank. C. Brian Jones, the founder and publisher of Trek FM. They also call him the Tattooed Terror. Our executive producers, Matthew Rushing and Ken Tripp. Aaron Harvey, our art director. Richard Marquez, our production manager. And Brandon Shea Metalla, our Patreon manager. And we would love to give a really big shout out to our associate producers, Bruce Lish, Drew Kim, Richard Marquez, Patrick Carlin, and Norman Lau. Thank you so much for your support of Trek FM and of To The Journey.
Well, be sure to join us next time when we will be drinking Antarian cider with the Sky People. But until then, this has been To The Journey.